morning and welcome to the Third Degree Climate Justice Radio here on 2SER 107.3 FM. I'm James.
And I'm Libby. And we're joined by Jess Miller, who works in the communications area of the environmental sector. And yeah, on this week's show, hello Jess.
Hi there, Libby.
How are you today?
Beautiful, such beautiful weather.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, and on this week's show, Nick's going to be talking with Michael Pierce, Vice President of Liberty Victoria, about ex-police officers who were hired by a uranium company to infiltrate environment groups.
And we'll also be looking at a report released by the ACF this week, suggesting that there's going to be a bunch of companies that are potentially going to make millions of dollars out of the Carbon Pollution Reduction Scheme, I think through some of the free permits Mr. K-Rod will be giving away.
Ah, yes.
But firstly, it's Radiothon this week, as a lot of you know. It's the time once a year when we ask you to help support 2SER. Now, you know, 2SER obviously plays a great role in promoting independent music. But one of the other things that makes 2SER really unique is that it provides, you know, a real alternate sort of views and voice for current affairs and covers a lot of underreported issues. And that's really what we're about here at the show, isn't it, Libby?
It is indeed. I guess there's a real culture and commitment to social justice and political change here at 2SER. So if you want to help support the station, you can show us by subscribing. It's $66 for standard, $33 for concession, or $120 for passionate subscribers. So give us a call on 9514 9500.
But now we're going to be talking about greenwash, aren't we, Jess?
Yes.
Greenwash is one of your favourite topics, isn't it?
I love it.
So what is greenwash, Jess? Give us a bit of a rundown.
Basically, greenwash is when a company puts more time and effort into creating a really slick PR and marketing campaign to show how fantastic they are for the environment without really doing anything.
Hmm. Well, it's you seem to see a lot more greenwash again and again and more these days. What's your most recent or favourite example of greenwash that you've seen?
Oh, I think my favourite would have to be the V8 supercars. It's just a no-brainer, really. You know, I think the claim made by them was that they would run the V8 supercar race and that they would plant a whole lot of trees which would quickly absorb the carbon emitted by those thunderous vehicles, when in fact it actually takes years and years and years and years and years. Mm. So that was probably quite obvious. It got pulled, all the right things happened, so it was a great example.
Yeah, and of course the V8 supercars really encouraging us to get out there and ride our bikes and buy hybrid cars and all that sort of thing.
Exactly, yeah, and particularly over at home. I think there's a bit of an issue over at Homebush now at the moment as well, where they're going to, you know, the beautiful work done with the Sustainable Olympic Village and trees being ripped from the nature strip.
Trees being ripped
Way
down.
To go.
Yeah, it's all a bit ugly and disturbing. Yeah, what are some other examples, well-known or less well-known examples of greenwash that people might be aware of?
I think greenwash sort of occurs at two levels. There's the advertising claims that are quite obvious and upfront, where companies go out and say that their latest car is green or that, you know, it's natural to fly carbon neutral. That's one of the ones.
It's natural to fly carbon neutral.
It is, yeah.
I don't even know what that means. It sounds good. I feel good hearing it.
I think that's what a lot of these sorts of campaigns are designed to do, just to sort of give that fluffy feeling without really having to address any of the systemic change that's required to really help fight climate change. Mm.
Do you think people buy these sorts of claims when they hear them? Like, you know, like that one we just mentioned there about flying. You know, I hear that and I feel like, oh, it's not that bad to fly maybe. Maybe I should have flown to work today or something.
Yeah, it makes you feel better.
Well, I think on the one hand, it's really great that increasingly businesses are giving people options, but it's more and more difficult to ascertain whether or not those options are actually meaningful. So in a later sort of choice survey, they looked at, a shopping centre, and there were 630 green claims on products, ranging from claims of sustainability, natural, recycled, and particularly the word sustainable, it It has good connotations, but does it really mean anything? I don't know.
Just throwing keywords out there.
Yeah, it
I
is.
I mean, can anything really be unnatural? It's hard to... Well, I suppose maybe more like you see claims about organic water.
Yeah, like, it's a bit of a semiotic quagmire, really.
It really is. And I think sustainability is one of those words that it is. It's just such a buzzword at the moment. What do you think about, I guess, the sort of power of greenwash to just distract people from any, like, actual, I don't know, real sustainable ways that they can sort of take their lives, because they're just so bombarded with information that it's difficult to know how you can actually make a real positive difference?
It is difficult, and I think that increasingly companies are aware of how much people actually want better options when they're shopping, particularly consumers. I suppose that they depend on it, but it's not all bad. I think that there are also, you know, Australian consumers seem to be quite sceptical, and it's a healthy scepticism to really scratch below the surface and expect that the claims that are being made are actually backed up by some good information, numbers and detail, whether it's available on the product itself or the website.
Cool.
Yeah, so I guess here at the Third Degree, we like to cover climate change and look at issues of sustainability and social justice a little bit differently from how maybe mainstream media and mainstream companies are trying to get us to think about it. We're trying to cover the actual science, not just the opinions of fossil fuel lobbyists. So I guess if you think that this is a valuable thing to do, if we add a little something positive to the public discourse around this issue, then... you can help us keep the station going by subscribing, which is, again, $66 for standard subscription, $33 for concession, or $120 for passionate.
And the number is 9514-9500. So it's 9514-9500. And we assure you your carbon emissions will reduce if you call the show immediately.
We're organic.
Definitely. We're organic. We're natural, supernatural.
Support real organic radio.
100% pure. Have you got any more examples of some of these products you might have seen around town, Jess?
There's a few. I mean, BP's just launched a massive campaign. It's really hard to miss it. And I guess they're also trying to address the climate change aspect as well as the kind of corporate social responsibility aspect. Mm. So,
and BP were called British Petroleum, but they changed a while back, didn't they, to Beyond Petroleum, I believe.
Oh, yeah, interesting.
Very strange. I don't know. And they put a big sunflower over the logo.
Yeah, I think logos and logos and images are really powerful. It's something that we sort of subconsciously pick up on without really understanding. So, you know, smiling people, clouds, clean air, trees, you know, they're great images, but what do they actually mean? And it's all good and well for BP to be investing in solar energy, which is fantastic. Like, and everyone should be doing that. But also there's the Opal fuel, the petrol sniffing fuel. I'm sure, you know, what is it? BP trying to combat petrol sniffing.
Yeah.
Excellent. But why not make all of their petroleum like that? Why is it that it's just one line? It's an interesting sort of dynamic between what they actually do, which is basically sell petrol so you can burn it in your cars, and how they like to sort of present themselves as good corporate social citizens.
And it's manipulative as well, because it really preys on what people are worried about and wanting to sort of help out with, I guess. Yeah. Did you maybe want to talk a little bit about celebrity endorsements and how that sort of plays into greenwash a bit?
Yeah, I guess one of the other sort of more insidious ways that you can greenwash is by the way you spend your money and who you choose as a spokesperson. The best recent example, of course, is Don Burke, the hired gun. Really.
The hired gun.
So,
explain that to us. What do you mean?
Well, Gunns Pulp Mill in Tasmania, of course, they just want to, you know, they've been fighting and fighting for funding to get this pulp mill off the ground. But they've recently employed Don Burke as their environmental advisor.
Oh, Don Burke.
So
He's their advisor.
Our advisor. Mm. So maybe he can, you know, tell them where to put the acacias or how to pulp them. Who knows? But it sort of, I mean, Don Burke, obviously a well-known person, well-known, I suppose, green-ish advocate. I suppose it's just another way that you can hire someone to sort of, you know, put your message out there. And yeah. People seem to, you know, you look at New Weekly and Who Weekly and the type of media that people read, and we're all trying to fight for this sort of messaging space, and celebrities do have a degree of cut through.
Mm.
So I actually went online and tried to find a celebrity. So pretending that I was a corporation, who would I get and how much would it cost?
Oh.
Interestingly, yeah. You can get someone, you can get Raymond from Everybody Loves Raymond for about $20,000 US.
I love Raymond.
Fantastic. And there's a whole website where you've basically got celebrities, green celebrities, the type of things that they'll talk about. And it's sort of a case as, you know, if the price is right, why not?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, if we had $20,000 floating around, maybe we could get Raymond as our
Raymond to be here instead of you, Jess, if we had $20,000.
You know, there we go. Well, apparently he worked for the US government in the Department of Environment or something between, you know, 1980 and 1988. So there's his cred.
He has got some cred.
He's very onto it. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
So what can people do, Jess? What's happening around this? How are we going to sort of tackle these companies that are preying on our green instincts?
I suppose it's really up to us to drive the change and to really demand and ask questions of companies about what the product is, what it does, where it comes from. At an industry level, there's been quite a lot of attention being paid to the issue of greenwash. The ACCC have put out a few reports concerning carbon offsets as well as broader marketing claims. The Australian Association of National Advertisers is currently looking at developing a code surrounding self-proclaimed green claims. So there's a discussion paper out about that at the moment. And the code would provide the industry with a sort of framework within which they can also educate themselves. I think that you really need to educate people within the advertising and marketing industry about the urgency of environmental issues and really bring them on board as part of the solution rather than, you know, just attacking them and bringing them down all the time. So I think that's quite positive, is really engaging the advertising and marketing industry and getting input from green groups and making sure that any claims made are meaningful so people have real options.
Well, I guess positive education is what we're all about here at 2SER.
It's what we try to do. Yes. We hope we provide, a bit of a different voice to perhaps the Daily Telegraph, who has a lot of opinion people who, often talk about climate change perhaps not being real or some great big global conspiracy somewhere out there. All these sorts of weird stuff. We try to cut through that and bring out a little bit of truth from Wasilla Main Street, as Sarah Palin would say, around climate change.
So I guess if you think climate change is real and you're interested in hearing more about that and wanting to support people who are wanting to talk about climate change and social justice in a real way, you can help support 2SER by subscribing. Give us a call on 9514 9500 if you want to subscribe or renew your subscription.
And it doesn't have to be just you. Perhaps you've got a pet or a cat perhaps, Felix Catus as the species name. We like to be scientific on the show. Wants to subscribe, subscribe your cat for $33.
Yep.
It's a bargain.
I think Felix Catus would really appreciate it.
Mm.
All right, well, I guess we can move on to some stories now. For the past few years, the Secret Intelligence Unit of the Victorian Police has been infiltrating activist and community groups to monitor their activities. One infiltrator even took the minutes at meetings for the Palm Sunday Peace March. They've been acting on the powers that they have to monitor terrorist groups, but are spying on groups that don't pose a security risk to the community. Privacy advocates are not so happy and are calling for these practices to be reined in. The Vice President of Liberty Victoria, Michael Pearce spoke with the Third Degree's Nick Collins.
Well, we can see the need for some kind of covert anti-terrorism policing, and we've seen in some recent terror trials here that they've produced some good results. It seems, though, that they're going well beyond their remit in infiltrating pretty harmless community organisations. For example, the Palm Sunday Organising Committee. This is a group of mainly church and other community bodies that get together each year to organise the Palm Sunday March, which, as some of your listeners will know, commemorates Jesus' entry into Jerusalem on a donkey to spread the word of peace. It's just incredible to think that the anti-terror unit of the police force is concerned about what these people are doing.
Deputy Commissioner Simon Overland was quoted in The Age saying that intelligence groups, their work, it was monitored to ensure that there were no, quote, inappropriate invasions of privacy.
Well, that would not appear to be correct from what we know. Mm. And what's been revealed about the sort of organisations that they are, that they have infiltrated, gave you the example of the Palm Sunday Organising Committee. There's also the Animal Liberation People. Now, you have to accept that those groups sometimes do engage in illegal activities, but they're not a terrorist group of any sort by any wild stretch of the imagination. And the activities of these covert police units ought to be confined to the terrorist area where there are real threats to public safety. But to be using the special powers of an anti-terror group against an organisation like that really is, you know, taking a sledgehammer to a walnut.
Sure, and what opportunity or capacity is there really to insure against these so-called inappropriate or improper breaches when the police files that are being created on these individuals are kept confidential?
Yeah, that's the problem. There is effectively none, and that really, I think, highlights the deficiency in the legal framework in which they operate. What is needed, I think, at the state level, which operates at the federal level, with ASIO, for example, is that these organisations or this unit of the police force needs to be subject to some parliamentary oversight. ASIO is subject to parliamentary oversight at the federal level, and if there are organisations at the state level engaging in activities similar to ASIO's, then they ought to be subject to the same kind of oversight.
I don't know if you can speak for Liberty Victoria's view on this, but, I mean, is this form of monitoring, and it's, I guess it's now been sort of outed, is it in any way sort of aimed at intimidation or to suppress dissent?
I don't know if you would go that far. Mm. It certainly hasn't stopped organisations like Liberty Victoria from speaking out against it. I think we're just seeing the overzealous use of these far-reaching policing powers. Now, I'm willing to accept that the policemen who are doing these things genuinely believe that they're doing the right thing. Mm. It's just that I don't think they have a proper appreciation for the limits that need to be placed on these pretty extraordinary powers when you're going around snooping on people and invading their privacy in this fashion. You need to be very careful about it, and you need to have a very good reason for it.
What is Liberty Victoria advocating in this instance, and in what manner, aside from, say, more parliamentary oversight?
I think that the unit itself within the police force, there needs to be a thorough review of its activities, and they need to be scaled back to the sorts of activities appropriate to the exercise of those sorts of powers. That is to say, the activities should be directed at real or possible threats to public safety through terrorist activities or similar serious breaches of the law. Secondly, within the state government and within the state parliament, there needs to be a review of the legal framework in which these units operate, and some form of oversight, certainly outside of the police force itself, and preferably by way of some kind of parliamentary committee, needs to be imposed on these activities. We hope that we'd learnt the lesson back in the 1980s when the special force was abandoned, but it seems that these things are a little bit like economic cycles. We have to keep learning the same lesson over and over again.
That was a little bit scary to hear about things like that. Well, a bit less scary than that. We've got some prizes here for people that the first three callers that call to subscribe. And if you, want to hear a little bit more about atomic energy, maybe hopefully without police infiltration, we've got a DVD, Australian Atomic Confessions, which is a chilling expose of British nuclear testing in Australia. We've also got a couple of CDs, Cut Off Your Hands, One, and Gypsy Groove. So, yeah, first three callers to call and subscribe to our lovely radio station. And that number is 95149500, 66 for standard, 33 for concession, or $120 for passionate subscribers.
And there's no police infiltration here on the third degree, is there, Libby?
Oh, well.
We only try to infiltrate your hearts and your minds.
Oh.
Oh. Well, we're going to be talking almost a little bit more about, I guess, greenwash in some ways. Now, we're going to be talking about the carbon pollution reduction scheme. So almost $3 billion will be paid to Australia's biggest polluters in free carbon permits as the federal government tries to ease into a carbon pollution reduction scheme. However, these emissions trading schemes, already in existence in other parts of the world, are often criticised as allowing companies to pay to pollute. That is to make a financial decision whether to reduce emissions or not. So what happens when a government pays companies who then pay to pollute? A report commissioned by ACF, or the Australian Conservation Foundation, has mapped how much funding the highest carbon emitters will receive in compensation when the emissions trading scheme begins in 2010. The figures include an estimated $825 million to aluminium smelting companies and $489 million to Rio Tinto. It's quite amazing. The top 10 recipients of assistance earned a combined $115 billion in operating profits in their most recent reporting years. That's like almost 10% or almost, it's like 1% of GDP. It's crazy.
Yeah.
The third degree's Jessica Minchell asked ACF about the climate change, asked ACF's climate change program manager, Tony Moore, about this report. Whoa, I'm not calling anybody. Let's go.
This report goes through and assesses just how much compensation different companies such as Rio Tinto, BHP Billiton, Xstrata, Mitsubishi, and Alumina Limited would receive from the federal government as we bring in an emissions trading scheme. These companies in total would receive around $2.8 billion in the first year of the emissions trading scheme alone, and yet many of them are actually asking for softer treatment and for a slower start to the scheme.
Could you briefly outline how the report was calculated?
The government has put forward its preferred options in something called a green paper about the emissions trading scheme, and also has used an example carbon price of $20 a tonne. We took that and combined it with publicly available information about the activities of these companies and their emissions, and combine that to derive what kind of compensation we're looking at for each individual company.
However, the report is split up into two different outcomes, one where black coal is being included in that compensation and one where it isn't. Why is there that separation?
Under the government's proposal, there's a threshold where companies are either able to get compensation or not, and it depends on what kind of income the companies are earning. Now, lately, the coal price has gone up quite a lot, and that might mean that coal is no longer eligible for compensation under the scheme, but it's not clear what kind of decision the government's going to make yet.
So you say that there's been a price allocated by the government as to whether certain companies are included in this compensation. Do you know why there's this reasoning?
The rationale is that the more carbon-intense a activity is, say aluminium smelting, the greater the impact of a carbon price would be on that company's profits. And so the argument goes that if it's a small ratio of, you know, carbon price to their overall income, then they probably don't actually need that compensation. But if it's a big impact, that they do. We'd actually argue that the across the board, the government's formula gives far too much money to big polluters who really should know that there has been a move towards reducing emissions across the world and within Australia for some time. We don't need to be spending this amount of money, $2.8 billion in the first year alone, on these big polluters.
But would you say that these large companies do need any compensation to move into an emissions trading scheme?
In some cases, some sections of the aluminium industry may not need compensation, but they need to have the emissions trading scheme dealt with in such a way that there's not an incentive for them to shut up shop and go to a country where there are worse environmental outcomes and worse greenhouse gas emissions than there are in Australia. But actually, Australia's electricity is quite dirty, and sometimes it may actually be a good thing for the environment if some of our most greenhouse gas intensive industry did go offshore.
This emissions trading scheme in itself has been criticised as allowing companies to pay to pollute, and this will be even more ineffective, you would imagine, if the government is then paying companies who are paying to pollute. In the response to your report, the Greens have come out and called for 100% of emissions permits to be auctioned as a way for these corporations to take seriously the role of reducing pollution. But they argue that this would also provide funding for the government to invest in renewable energy. Does the ACF support what the Greens are saying here, or what do you see as a better solution?
We also fully support the 100% auctioning of all the certificates and then the wise use of those funds for productive things like energy efficiency programs, public transport infrastructure, and we can't see a great slab of the money from this scheme go straight to businesses who are polluting with no requirement on them to actually reduce their emissions.
And that was Jessica Mitchell speaking to Tony Moore about the ACF's, or talking to ACF's Tony Moore. And thanks to the subscribers who've been calling up during the show. If you want to jump on the bandwagon and subscribe to 2SER, give us a call here in the studio or outside the studio. In fact, 95149500. And we know the economy's in trouble. It's you've got to sell all your stocks now. And getting quick, because we definitely have some big returns here, don't we, Libby?
Oh, we do. Big ethical returns.
Yes, 95149500 and help support the station, which supports you in many ways.
It does indeed. Well, yeah.
Well, Jess, if people are seeing greenwash out there, what do you reckon they should do if they've seen a bit of greenwash on the telly or down the supermarket, mate? What do you reckon?
There's a few things you can do. Obviously, the first point of call is the ACCC. You can write a letter and just say, you know, I've seen this. I found it misleading or deceptive, which is actually what the Trade Practices Act is designed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So companies in breach of the Trade Practices Act can be taken to court by the ACCC. And all the product has to do is be misleading or deceptive. So if that's the way you feel about something, you have every right to go and do that. Write a letter to the corporation, blog about it, talk to your friends about it, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Call 2SER.
Yeah, call 2SER. Let everybody know about it. I think it's, you know, rather than kind of... And also, like, instead of just bagging out people who do bad stuff, you can also give props to companies who you think are taking a really good effort and making some meaningful changes. So that's what we want to happen. We want a meaningful shift.
Totally. Well, if you've seen any greenwash, let us know here at the Third Degree. It's the Third Degree with the number three, the Third Degree at 2ser.com.au. You can also visit our website and let us know and listen to our podcasts and all sorts of lovely things. That's climateradio.blogspot.com.
Yes, it is. And I guess that's sort of all we've got time for today.
It is indeed.
So we'll say goodbye to you all. And this is actually James's last show for a while. He's going away.
I'm definitely not flying overseas. No, I am, but, you know, I'm going away. It's also our six-month anniversary of the Third Degree here as well.
Is it? Oh, wow.
Like what we've been
around for a while, yeah.
And thanks very much, Jess.
Thank you.
For joining
us.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks everyone. And
we'll
yeah,
be back,
we'll
same
be back
time
next week.
Bye.